Welcome to the Voices of Freedom podcast, brought to you by Freedom a la Carte, where fearless conversations meet unwavering passion for justice. We're your hosts, Devin and Dory. Whether you're tuning in for the first time or you've been with us since day one, get ready for another season packed with inspiring stories, thought-provoking discussions, and a dash of that freedom spirit. We're your guides through the realms of empowerment, advocacy, and the pursuit of a world where every voice is heard. Each week, we'll be chatting with changemakers, survivors, thrivers, and visionaries who are shaping a brighter, more equitable future. Whether it's personal stories of triumph, insights into pressing social issues, or tips on how to make a positive impact, we got it all. And don't forget, this podcast isn't just about listening. It's about joining a movement. Get ready to be inspired and challenged. And most importantly, get ready to be a part of the change. So grab your favorite cup of coffee, tea, or whatever fuels your passion and join us as we dive into our next episode.
Well, welcome everybody to Voices of Freedom. To our next episode, we have Kwame here. Now, today's our episode is about child labor trafficking. Now, Kwame, can you start us with a quick introduction about your hobbies, pets, things of that nature, favorite movies, you know?
Absolutely, yes. My name is Kwame Adowo Herrera, and I am very honored to be here with all of you today and with your listeners and just very grateful. Very, very grateful. What can I start? Growing up, one of my favorite things to do is to play soccer. You know, soccer is something I grew up with, and I still play soccer to this day.
Oh, yeah?
Yes.
What position did you play?
I was either a midfielder or right leg, which means I do a lot of I'm on offense all the time, running, playing center or playing left or right. Or middle, you know, just as like my goal is I'm always running.
I like how I asked you and I know nothing about soccer, so you could have totally made up a position. And I'm like, oh, really? That's so cool.
You know, I'm always running.
I'm always running.
I kept hearing.
No, yes. And actually, it pays off when I was in high school or middle school, actually. You know, I got involved with track here because growing up in my country, track, it wasn't something that I grew up with, so... But soccer is, like, big. That's, like, number one sport that we are, like, all about. Like, everybody plays soccer. So
yeah. What country did you grow up in?
I grew up in a small country in the west coast of Africa called Togo.
Togo,
yes, correct. So it's very small. It's about the size of Maryland. Yeah, so just in case you want a picture there,
yeah.
That's how small it is. That's all I know. And so when I came to the U.S., you know, I fell in love with the sport of track, you know. Mm-hmm. Actually, one of my coaches, when I was playing soccer, discovered me. He's like, in high school, he's like, hey, that kid is fast. We need to recruit him to do track. I'm like, I know nothing about track. I don't know what you do. So I went for trial, and I got it. You know, that's what, you know, the rest is history after that, you know. So I became part of the track team, and, you know, I ran track in college as well, too. So it was a journey, but I loved it. Yeah, it was,
you're a runner.
Yes.
What's your favorite food?
Favorite food? Oh, shoot. Let's see. When I first came here, pizza. I love pizza because, you know, everybody talks about pizza. Like, everybody's like, American food is the best. American food is the best. So I started eating a lot of pizza when I came here, you know, drinking pop and all these things. I realize that's not good for me now. But
Good thing you were running a lot to where I run it off.
But I realized that now, so I don't really. It's not my favorite food per se, but it was a great food. You know, when I was eating it. But right now, if I had to pick, you know, I still prefer my, you know, traditional food that I grew up with in my country. You know, yeah. Rice and beans. It's very simple stuff. Rice and beans, chicken, just the basic. You know, so I do cook a lot at home. So. That's what I do, you know, just stick to the basic, what I know best.
Yes. Good answer. So, like you said, you are originally from Togo, right?
Yes,
that's how you say it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, like Dory mentioned, this episode is about child labor trafficking, and you have lived experience. Can you give us a surface level view of what your lived experience is?
Yeah, absolutely. I can definitely do that. You know, when I was around 7 years old, you know, growing up in my country, something that I do wish, and I hope I can help do better in my country is that we don't have public education where it's free. You know, it's so school in my country is basically like this. It's a prepaid car. It's a prepaid phone. It's like back in old days when you have the prepaid car, you scratch and you use up the minutes and then you, that's it. That's how school is in my country. So you pay to go to school. If you pay $100, once the $100 is up, you go back home.
They send you home.
So school is it's a privilege. You know, to go to school in my country is a privilege.
Yeah.
You know, we don't take it for granted. So that's something my parents, they never had a chance to go to school. I'm the oldest with seven. So, you know, they want us to go to school. They want the best for us. Well, we are farmers. We do sharecropping. So we don't have everything. You know, we don't have all together. But they really care about us getting education, especially me because I'm the oldest. So they want me to get education. So they will do whatever they can to send me to school for $5 or $10 or $20, whatever it is. You know, they will do the best to send me and I come back home. Because you don't pay, you don't go to school. Regardless, it's a public school or private school, you don't.
Can you tell us what a day of school would be? You said $5 to $10. Like, what does that get you?
I don't really know, because that's the thing, you know. Because once it's up, you know. Like if it's, they deem to be how much you pay for, and that's how much you get earned, you know. And so basically, day in life, you know, we woke up 7 in the morning. We started school, so we go to school. I should be in school by 7:30, and then we line up. Every grade level, you line up in the courtyard, you know, and then we sing our national anthem, Pledge of Allegiance, all of those things, and then everybody dance, announcements done at the same time. So everybody's in one location where this is all happening. So, you know, once that's done and everybody, you know, march into their classrooms and the school starts at that point, and everybody's back in their grind of school. And that's, you know, we go to school from 7:30 until 12, and then we go home for 12:30 for lunch. And then we go back again at around 3:30. For the second half of the school. So we do get a break in between and then go back again and then come back home around 5:30. So that's how school was for us, you know, in my country. So I do wish we had that here, but that's okay. You know, I know that could be it's a difference for different days. But but that's how a day in life it is for, you know, me when I was, you know, in school in my country. It's very simple. It's very, you know, when you come home around 12:30 until, you know, that 2 hour period, you go hunting, you know, you go get food, you know, you go out in the field, you go, you know, go get some, you know, climb some trees for, you know, bananas or you just use the land, use the what you have, the nature to gather food, you know.
Yeah.
And so, you know, or you go to, you know, your parents, you know, land and go work there for a few hours and come home and take a rest and then go back to school. So this idea was, you know, that's the way school is in my country, and that's how structure. So, you know, it's good. I loved it. You know, I really enjoyed it. I wish that my parents had the money to send me to school, but they didn't, you know. So that's where this how I got here, you know, in the first place. So my trafficker, you know, he grew up in the same country as me. He's a family friend. He knows them. I didn't know him. I was a young kid, so he saw an opportunity, you know. He told my parents, hey, I will bring your kid to the U.S. and I'll give him an education. So, you know, my parents were happy and I was happy. He was already living here in the U.S., so he's a U.S. citizen. You know, he's from the same country as me. He's from the same village, the same city. So people know him very well.
Okay.
So he's familiar. He's, you know, we talk about familiar trafficking. Yeah, he's one of those, yeah.
Okay.
He's a family friend. So that's all that story, you know. That's how my journey of being trafficked. That's the essentially the bulk of it is that he promised my family that he will provide me education here in the U.S. And so I came with him, not knowing who he is, but my parents do, and they trust him. So they entrust me to this man that grew up in the same country as me. And so, yeah, I came, and I was 7 years old. I was young.
Yeah, really young.
Yeah.
Had you known other people who have done similar things? Like, was this like somewhat normalized in Togo?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay.
Again, I'm young, but I can tell you, I wasn't the only one that came here with this man. This man brought 4 kids.
At the same time that you came?
Yes. I came with 3 other kids.
Were you the only one that was being trafficked, or
no,
were the
all
other
of us, all of us?
Okay,
all of us.
Yeah. So tell us what that looks like. So you get to the U.S. and then what?
Yeah, I got to the U.S. because this man, he knows the system, he knows the policies of the country very well. So he used it to his advantage. You know, he manipulated the system.
Mm-hmm.
He changed my birthday. He changed my name. He gave me a whole new identity.
Wow. Yeah.
Whole new identity. Like, you don't do that to a person, but
yes.
He did.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how he was able to bring me here, you know, change my birthday. So he had paperwork that he did all down in different names, a different birthday, different everything, you know. So I was a brand new person, somebody just created out of thin air. The old me doesn't exist anymore. I came to this country. The old me was gone. It's dead.
Oh, so you go by the name that he gave you?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. When I say he created me out of thin air, I meant that. Like, new name, new birthday, new everything. Everything about me was new before I came to this country. That's how good he was with the system. He knows the system to the best.
Mm-hmm.
And he used that to bring me, not just me, but like I said, to other kids as well, too. And so I came here. I had to learn that name. Everywhere we go, I have to make sure that I use that name properly, and he's always next to me. He never left my side. I barely go to hospital. If I do go to hospital, I do because maybe he beat me to the point where I need to go to hospital. Even that, we don't even go to hospital. I mean, he doesn't take us to the hospital because he knows people ask questions.
Yeah.
So this man knows the system too well. You know, I didn't. I mean, I'm young. I was only young. You know?
Right.
How am I supposed to know what to do? I don't even speak English. You know, I have to learn English, you know, when I got here. And so he knows what he was doing.
Mm-hmm.
He knows exactly what he was doing, and there's no question asked about that. You know, you cannot change somebody's birthday, somebody's name. You cannot give somebody a new identity without thinking there's something going on here. You know, I didn't know.
Right.
I didn't know. And so the day in the life, you know, with my trafficker is this. Everything was controlled by him. From the moment I wake up until I go to bed, this man was there.
Mm.
Wake up 4 in the morning. Oh, also, he also put us in school because he knows if we don't go to school, you know, that's part of probably the government policy here. So kids have to go to school. If not, you got people knocking on your door.
Right.
So he was also in school. So I was a full-time student and full-time working for him as a minor. 4 in the morning, clean the house, do anything I need to do in the house, be around the table by 5 o'clock, be studying. And then he woke up and he sit next to us. Force us to work, tell us how our day should be. Everything laid out. Everything. There was never a time in my life where I have a free day, a free moment, a free anything. The only time I had a free time is when I'm at school.
Mm.
School became my safe place.
Right.
School became my home, my new home.
Mm.
That's the only place I feel safe. The moment I get into that bus in school, I feel like I'm by myself. I feel like I can breathe.
Yeah.
But once that bell rings to go back home, I'm shaking.
Mm.
I am shaking in the bus until I got to the house. Like, I became terrified. I'm just...
Aww.
Just thinking about that moment right now, like, just coming off that school bus.
Yeah. Reliving trauma is just like going back and being in that same situation again. So we appreciate you being vulnerable with us and sharing this lived experience.
And the saddest thing about this is that we live in a regular neighborhood too.
Mm.
We live in a regular neighborhood with kids around. Nobody suspect anything ever was happening because we kept it all secret. He kept it all secret in locked door. This man knew what he was doing.
Yeah.
Not only did I work for him, he also abused me if I don't get the work done properly.
Mm.
I still have the scars on my body to tell the story.
Mm.
I wear glasses because of that. My left eye has a bruise on it.
Mm.
It's a story I have to tell my kids someday. Like, this is how I got to this country. This is what my life was like.
Mm-hmm.
I have to explain to them, like, I do this work because of you, so I can protect you from people like that man that tortured me.
Yeah.
Took advantage of me.
When I listened to you speak at the conference, you talked about how this teacher is the one that you ended up confiding in. And I think you said it took a couple years.
Yes,
do you want to talk about, like, what the teacher did that made you feel safe to confide in her?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
It was a female, right?
Yeah, it was a female, teacher? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, like I said, no, I spent at least 6 years with my trafficker, and this kept going on for many, many years. We changed school, like, at least 3 times.
Mm-hmm.
I changed school 3 times, and I never go to the same hospital twice. Again, this is, you know, if you, you know what, you know.
You never went to the same hospital twice, and you changed school 3 times.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes, and changed a house 3 times too, yeah. So
and you changed houses 3 times.
Yeah, we went to different districts.
Okay.
Yes.
Because people were getting suspicious?
I don't know. Because that's the thing. I don't know if it was just, I don't know if I was being trafficked. I don't know if I was being enslaved. I don't know if I was...
Yeah.
All that was happening, I don't know. I just do what he said.
You know?
And I was...
You're a child.
I'm a child.
Yeah.
I don't have the mental capability to understand what was going on. Mm-hmm. Oh, we are moving. Oh, cool. Yes. Yeah, let's move. Oh, you just follow. I just follow whatever he tells me.
Right.
I do whatever he asks me to do. Mm-hmm. I do it just thinking it's normal. So that keep going on for a total of 6 years. In between those 6 years, you know, it was not until I got to middle school. And then I had a teacher... to this day, she's awesome. She's became part of my family. She's all, you know. I love this lady. She so much. She wasn't trained in human trafficking to to understand what's going on. But she's been working for kids for many years, so she knows when kids something going on. She just knows. She have that intuition. She just know I need help. She just knows something was going on. She told me this later. She said, the first time I met you, I knew something about you. I was drawn to you. I'm like, huh, okay. Okay, whatever you said.
She just had a sense going on.
Exactly. She just knew it. And that moment, she said, she was taking a notes on me. Creating reports on me every day. Everything she knows, she was writing it down.
She was taking notes on you.
She was. She was studying me. She was making sure that I'm taking care. And that's what she did. I come to the classroom every next day and every day. She's just studying me. She was studying me to the point where, because she knows I need help.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless, I knew it or not, she knows I need help.
Mm-hmm.
And she was doing her due diligence. She was doing what she needs to do to make sure that I get help that I need.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what she did. And so one day I came to school and I just, you know, sit in the back. Cause, you know, again, here's some things or some signs that, you know, you see in the kids, you know.
Yeah.
I came to school and I miss school a lot too. And it's all a sign for somebody to know something's up. I came to school late sometimes. I come to school with sweaters on. You know, I came to school with just bruises on my body, crying sometimes. All things that she's been noticing, and she's writing it down.
Mm.
And so one day, I came to school, and I was just sitting in the back because we have assigned seats. And so I was sitting in the back and just, you know, the hood on, and just I was withdrawn from my class. I have nothing to do with class.
You were just in survival mode.
I'm in the classroom. That's all I need to be right now. This is where I need to be. The place I need to be. That's where I was.
Yeah.
And so the kids went to recess, and she said, "You stay back."
Hmm.
Said, "We need to talk." And she came up to me. She just said, "Hi, how can I help you?" The simple hi. How can I help you?
Yeah.
I'm gonna start crying.
Wow. It's amazing.
It was the beginning of my journey to now.
Yeah.
That simple step, that action she took that day, she took the courage to come up to me. Just say hi.
Mm.
And I just broke down. I broke down. in front of this lady that I don't even know. I know she's my, that's all I know, all I know is she's my teacher. Mm-hmm. I broke down. I cried. And she just sat next to me. She sat next to me and just in silence, just let me cry it out, let it all out.
Yeah, gave you space
to do what I need to
feel
do.
Feel safe with her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's what happened.
So did you end up telling her that day?
Fortunately, I did not, because my trafficker has brainwashed me to the point where he said, do not trust your teacher. Do not trust anybody that's not me, especially not the authorities. Do not trust anybody.
Mm-hmm.
So I was scared to tell her everything. But again, because she took that step, she just gave me the space just to cry. I gave her a little bit something to bite on.
Yeah.
I told her I'm not okay.
Mm.
And I showed her the bruise on my arm that day. I didn't tell her everything because I'm scared to tell her. You know, I fear for my life. At this point, I'm starting to realize that something is not right about this whole situation. And I'm starting to grow. I'm starting to learn English. I'm starting to get more clever. I'm starting to understand my surroundings. So this is not normal.
Mm-hmm.
I started to realize that it's not normal. My friends are not being treated like this. My friends are all playing sport. My friends all my classmates, they are my friends. My classmates all have friends. They gather around, they talk about their weekends, the things. Well, my weekend involved me working, cleaning houses,
mm-hmm.
you know, painting, doing things, you name it all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's my weekend consists of. And hearing my classmates talk, I'm like, Oh, something started clicking.
Mm-hmm.
I'm starting to realize that, like, okay, this is not normal for me. It's not
right.
normal behavior. It's not a normal behavior. It's not a normal kids' life, you know, behavior. So I told her, you know, that day, I just kind of gave her a little bit of detail of why I came to school late and why I'm crying and why I'm sitting back here and just show her my bruise. All of this, no words, just lift up my t-shirt and just show her the bruise on my arm that day.
Mm.
And that was the beginning of our journey together.
That's good.
The journey to victory. The journey to
safety. That's good.
Yeah.
So, just wanted to kind of ask you about like the stigmas and myths that exist surrounding male human trafficking survivors. Could you express a little bit more about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the biggest things that people need to understand is that because we have normalizing, you know, so my experience was in child labor, and so, and the more I think about it, the more I realize that we have normalizing trafficking, you know, especially labor trafficking in this country. We have normalizing that. What does that mean? What does that mean? So what that means is that we kind of, in our past history, slavery back then, you know, we kind of realized that, oh, that was, in, you know, that was hierarchical. So we kind of like have this, you know, idea that, oh, it doesn't happen anymore because, you know, there was a lot of that past that said, you know, slavery has ended.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but it's technically, no, it hasn't. It actually got evolved, and we kind of just suppressed it then, and now it kind of evolved into something bigger, and it's worse, and it's we have more people now. I mean, we got some of the stats. We have more people in slavery now than we did back in, you know, in 1800, in the 1700. We have more people now than ever.
Mm.
It's the second money making business in the whole world right now.
It just looks different.
It just looked different.
Then.
It just looked a lot different. It's too many people.
Mm-hmm.
Way too many people. It doesn't. Everybody is involved. Everybody is a victim. Everyone, and everyone is vulnerable to being trafficked. No one is safe.
Mm.
And so when I talked to people about I was trafficked, and they're like, you? Wait, how is that impossible? It's like, how is that possible? We all have vulnerabilities.
Yeah.
That's what this trafficking is, what these people are good at. They are good at attacking your vulnerability. They are good at honing on that thing that you seek most.
Mm-hmm.
And they will prey on that.
Mm.
And that is how they are good. That's how we are all vulnerable. That's how anyone can be traffic any day. Mm. And that's the one of the stigma I have to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
You're a male. How does that? How can you be? You're strong. Or no.
You're a child.
No. I'm a child.
Yeah.
I was a child. I was taken away from my family.
Mm.
I was. My name was changed.
Mm-hmm.
My identity was taken away from me. Excuse me, but yes, this is a problem.
Mm-hmm.
We need to address that issue.
Mm.
No. Labor trafficking is a thing.
Right.
It's just as worse as sex trafficking. You know, mm-hmm. we have to look at it. We are, it's just mm-hmm. human beings that are being used for money.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Human beings are being used for money, and we need to do something about that. We need to fix that. And so, and that's the biggest stigma I deal with is that how can you, as a male, be a victim of labor trafficking or human trafficking? I'm like, well, I am. There's nothing I can do about that.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't choose to. To be part of that, and it just somebody else wanted to take advantage of me, and that's what I did.
Yeah.
And I'm grateful to be where I am right now, but it's a trauma that I have to deal with.
Yep.
It's a trauma I have to deal with for the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm.
We talk a lot about trauma on this podcast, and you led us right into something else that we wanted to talk about with you. Is we have heard that there's a difference between how males process trauma than females. Do you have any insight on that?
Oh, I do. I very much have a lot to say about that. I personally, one of the things I wanted to touch upon is that a while ago, when I found my way out of my trafficker, and when I was rescued from my trafficker's home, and I found a place to be. You know, it wasn't the best place to be at, but that's what I got. That's what the state of Michigan had that moment. They were trying to get me to go to counseling.
They're trying to get you to go to counseling?
Yes.
Okay.
No, I don't know if that's a part of the process or what kind of state's thing that they do or not, but I have to do it, because I'm now in the custody of the state. So,
mm-hmm.
again, I don't know. The whole thing seemed very weird and sketchy to this day, and I still struggle to quite understand what happened and how they failed to provide me with the service that I needed. They sent me to this counseling, this woman that I have to see, and because I think this one was in the foster care system. I don't remember because I jumped from. I was in juvenile delinquency home, and then for a few months, and then I ended up in foster care system. So. What a mess.
Mm-hmm.
So I was constantly, I was saying, now she really did not treat me as a human.
Mm.
She was blaming me. She was using, she basically re-victimizing me in this moment. She caused me more trauma than I wanted to deal with at that point. She just blamed me. She was blaming me. She's thinking, she's like, oh, and she wouldn't listen to me. She constantly just fighting me on things. And plus, English wasn't my first language. English was my third language. So she was just twisting words. She's trying to put words in my mouth. She's trying to say this and that. And I went twice, and I stopped going because I had just had a really bad experience with everything she was doing. It was bad.
Mm.
To put that aside, my trauma journey hasn't ended yet. I'm still, as a male, we are conditioned to be strong.
Mm-hmm.
And so we internalize everything. We our trauma that I've dealt with, I take it on works. I take it on everything else. I try to avoid my trauma. Trying to be strong. I try to portray myself as being this strong person that I can deal with this by myself. And so that is the difference between male and women. Is that we have no outlet. Our outlet is to get physical or do things that we know we can control. We don't want to be vulnerable. And I was already vulnerable once already, and trying to do that again one more time to let somebody in to hear me, it's just not part of what I want to do anymore. I want to avoid as much as I can.
Mm-hmm.
I want to avoid my past. I want to avoid it.
Right.
Even though I'm dealing with it, I know I need help, but I just... I want to do it myself.
Mm-hmm.
I want to take care of myself.
Mm-hmm.
I tell you, that doesn't work. That is not.
Yeah.
It does not work. It doesn't get you far.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
But because I had a better experience also on top of that, and it just, it makes it hard for me to just open up to anybody, to just to share my life, or to let somebody in. It's a struggle. It's a struggle for me to this day. I need help. You know, I'm for the record, I need help, but I just, part of me don't want to go anywhere. Part of me doesn't want to let anybody in my life right now, because I just, I'm scared of living that moment again. I'm scared of being treated like I'm just somebody, a checklist.
Yeah.
And I don't want to deal with it again. I don't want to deal with that again.
Mm.
And so that's the difference between, you know, males dealing with trauma and a woman dealing with trauma. It's just, it's a lot different. It's not tangible for us. I mean, we become more self-reliance.
Mm.
I personally, that's what I deal with. I became self-reliance. I want to do all by myself. I want to take care of myself. I want to go. So I'm trying to avoid the past. Mm-hmm. But again, it always catch up to you. People say the past will catch up to you if you don't deal with it.
Mm.
And it's true.
Yeah.
It's true in my life.
Yeah.
I'm still dealing with it.
Yeah. I feel like what happened to you, you're always going to live with it.
Yeah.
But it's just figuring out how to live with it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, okay.
So, let's
go to a happier spot. Okay. I feel like we've been real heavy. And I know there's so much good stuff that you are working on, that you're fighting for. Yeah. So talk to us about what are some goals that you have for your future self, and talk to us about your male shelter.
Yes, absolutely.
Ooh, yes. Exciting.
It is very exciting. You know,
he has a big smile on his face. I know the listeners won't be able to see this, but he's glowing right now thinking about it. So I think that's important.
Yes. So I think about 3 years ago, I served on the United States Advisory Council for the federal government.
No big deal or anything. Holy crap.
I served on the...
Jeez! He just said that nonchalantly.
He really did.
I serve on the council. Yes, it's a big deal. Yes.
Like, do a little shoulder swipe here, man.
Yes. Accomplishment. Oh, I did it. Yes. One of the things I advocate for when I was on, actually, it opened my eyes to working with different survivors, you know, on this, on this advisory council. You know, I was able to learn a lot from everybody, you know, because we all come from different work, you know, backgrounds.
But
you know, yet we all have a common goal in that we want to live in a free world where trafficking is gone, where modern slavery is gone. We have that common goal. And so what can we do is that we pull our heads together to come up with, you know, recommendations and tools that we can help with the federal government to improve on, and also to trickle down to the states and then the local and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That was the goal. That's the main goal of, you know, the council, is that to advise, you know, the president's interagencies and Congress and just give them recommendations and review documents for them. And so my eyes, I had awakening when I was on the council,
mm-hmm.
and things I was hearing. Yeah. And one of the things I came across is that shelter for males in this country does not exist.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I remember. And it took me back to my own past. I'm like, wait a second, that is right. Why is it that when I left my trafficker's home, I was placed in juvenile delinquency home? Why? Why is that? That's not where I need to be at.
Right.
Why is it that I ended up in a foster care system? That's not where I need to be at. I wasn't a trouble case. I was not a trouble kid. I just need a place to lay my head to feel safe.
Mm-hmm.
What is going on?
Mm-hmm.
So I started to look around in different states, and now nobody has anything, right? And it just made me be, there's nothing. There's only one state that I know of, and that's in Texas, have a shelter for males, sex trafficking survivors. You have six beds.
They have six beds.
Six beds out of the whole entire country of the United States. One shelter.
It's bad. It really is. It's bad.
One shelter. And that only serves six people, six males. And how can we, like, let's think about that for a second.
Yeah, and I think that is goes back to, one, we only have 1% of the population in the world who who shares that they're survivors of human trafficking. And then if you add in a layer of males do not disclose that they're survivors of human trafficking, and then why would they? There's nowhere for them to go. Because there's only six beds.
Even that, we don't even know it's a resource for us. We barely have resources in place for males, especially when you are an immigrant or someone who is from a different country. You are treated differently.
Yeah.
I don't want to be deported. You are scared. You have been told you'd be deported. You have been brainwashed by a trafficker that these people are your enemy. So add on to that layer, it's like, oh, yeah, no, I don't want anybody to know about me. You know, again, let's go back to trauma, because you also don't want people to the stigma. You don't want people to know you are trafficked. You know, you just want to
keep hush-hush and lay as low as you can.
As much as you can. And so males do struggle a lot with identifying themselves because they don't want to feel that stigma. They don't want to be labeled. They don't want to be placed in it. And so it's something we need to work on. And it's something that I am fighting for. And that's one way that I can do that is have a place ready for the males.
Mm-hmm. So that without is your resource, big project.
Yes. Without the resource, males not come forward because they need to know they'll be safe. Mm-hmm. They need to know that. That's what I needed. I needed to know that I would be safe. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
It's important. Yeah.
So that's what I'm working on right now. And I've been partnered with different people throughout the states and been working with the AG's office, you know. They have a working group right there now. We are trying to build this from the ground up because there's no structure for us. This is from ground. I'm doing this all from scratch right now. And it's a lot of work.
Oh, yeah.
It's a lot of work, and I'm not going to stop until I achieve that goal. Because I know this is the mission that was given to me, the mission that I'm going to accomplish that. And I will accomplish that. Now, this year, whatever it takes, how long will it take me, I will. This country, this state will have a shelter for males coming soon.
Yes, and we will champion you.
Thank you.
Didn't you tell me, and I could be mistaking you with someone else, but didn't you tell me you just filed your 501(c)(3)?
Not yet.
Oh, you haven't got that done. That. Okay, you're working on it.
I just finished my bylaw, and I'm going to have somebody
look at it. Oh, did you bylaw? That's good.
Yes.
What is your organization's name going to be called? Can you tell us?
So, yes, I'll give you a
delay. We're going to inside scoop.
What is it called?
It's called Talios.
Talios?
Yeah, Talios.
So what's that mean?
Well, it's a Greek word. It means perfect. It means to be whole, to complete.
Oh, I like that. To be whole. Yeah.
To be complete. To be whole.
Okay.
That's beautiful. That's what that means. How do you find that?
So one of these days, I was reading through the Bible, I came across the scripture from Matthew. I love Matthew's gospel. It's one of my favorites. And so in that, I think it was Matthew 48. So in the verse, it's talking about Jesus was talking to disciples saying that be as perfect as your heavenly Father is perfect. And that word perfect, that is from Greek. It means to be whole. So be as perfect, be as whole as your heavenly Father that made you, you know. And so, as a victim, as a survivor, part of me has been my life has been taken from me.
Yeah.
You know, my identity has been taken away. Mm-hmm. And so, in order to get control of that, I need a place to stay. I need a place. I need a shelter. I need a home. I need somebody to look at me and say, "You are worthy. You."
It is.
Are a person, you are a human being that I'm willing to fight for.
Yeah.
I want to help you complete that journey. And so that's where the name came from. That's why this mission needs to happen, because we know that there are males out there who are a victim, who need help.
Yeah.
And they don't want to come forward because one, there is no resource for them.
Yeah.
And two, they don't know who to trust.
Did resources.
They don't be deported.
Yeah.
And those are the three reasons that I'm having this shelter for, to help.
Because
that's what I needed it. And I didn't have that. And now I'm giving back to my community. I want to give back to those who need that help.
Awesome.
Oh.
Yes.
I'm so happy for you, Kwame.
Thank you.
I know that you'll get it done, and you will be a change maker for hopefully the whole country. Yes. You know, hopefully we can take this, what you're creating, and hopefully we can take it and duplicate it throughout the country.
That's the goal.
And, you know, we're going to be here championing behind you.
Thank you.
And helping support you. So please let me know when it is official so we can share with our listeners, because I know that they will support you as well.
Yes.
And I just want to thank you for sharing your story with us, sharing, you know, such vulnerable things that happened to you, and letting us learn from your story. I think this is the best way that people can learn. So I really, really am grateful for you.
Thank you.
Dory, is there anything else that you want to add before I close out?
I just want to ask one question.
Yes.
What key message do you hope that the listeners can take away from this?
Yes, something I always preach everywhere I go, you know, is take the moment to listen to a survivor.
Yeah.
When you come across a victim or survivor, you just take the moment, just give them the space to be who they are. And treat them with dignity.
Mm.
Treat them like you want somebody to treat you.
Yeah.
Right.
Treat them with you like they are your son or they are your daughter.
Mm.
Yes.
Give them the respect they deserve, because, you know, sometimes we just want to fix the person. That's not the goal. I don't want you to fix me.
Yeah.
I just want to listen. I just want you to listen to me. I just want you to be there for me.
Mm-hmm.
To tell me everything will be okay.
I think that's really important. I want to echo that again. We do not need to fix these people.
Yes.
They don't need us to fix them. No. They need us to be there and listen.
Yeah, compassion, love.
Empathy,
yeah, it's very
love.
Essential.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we're covered all multitudes.
Thank you for sharing that, Kwame, because that is super important. And we do need reminders of we are not the fixers.
Mm-mm.
We're here to walk alongside you
and
listen and be your support.
Right.
And that's the goal for my shelter. I'm here to support.
Mm.
Give them support.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Kwame, for joining us today.
Yes.
And we want to remind our listeners to share their voices, because your voice matters.
Yes.